Today I'm here with McKay Thomas, who founded Baby Center, which is a baby site in Brazil. And McKay has quite a story, and I'm sure he's going to tell us some interesting stuff. So, McKay, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
So you're originally from Utah, right?
Yeah, that's right.
How on earth did you end up in Sao Paulo?
Well, that's a good question. You know, we had a pool tables business that was based out of Draper, which is just south of Salt Lake. And we ran pooltables.com for 7 years. And it was while we were building pool tables that all of us, the three founders of baby.com.br, we were all working at pooltables.com. And we all felt like there was something bigger and better that was awaiting us, you know, after that business. And we had an opportunity to sell pooltables.com, which we did. And at that time, we were like, okay, well, this is it. What do we want to do next? And at the time, the U.S. had, you know, been in a recession for a year. And it looked like the recovery was going to take a couple more years at least. And so we started kind of broadening our sights and looking elsewhere. And we started looking into the BRIC countries. And, you know, we looked at Russia, we looked at India, we looked at China, and it just, none of them seemed very livable. You know, I have a wife, I had a baby at the time when we were looking into this, and both the co-founders of baby.com.br, they also had kids, and so we really needed a place that our wives would be cool with, that we could be cool with, you know, living for a while. And Brazil just really started calling to us. It's a great country, very livable, really warm climate, really great beaches, and it's, you know, relatively safe.
But you ended up in Sao Paulo, right? Like, I was speaking with a friend of mine from down there just last week, and he doesn't live in Sao Paulo, though he did for a couple of years, and he said Sao Paulo is like, it's like a restroom. You have to go there sometimes, but you don't go too often. as you can see, that's Brazilian humor for you.
What's funny about that is is there some truth to it? I mean, do I know why he said it? Sure. I mean, that's a really funny anecdote, actually. But, you know, Sao Paulo is also the business hub of Latin America and of Brazil. Hmm. And although, yes, it's not on the beach, and yes, it's a total cement jungle. I mean, it's a megacity. You know, 20 million people live there. But at the same time, you know, the people are really warm. It's one of the best food cities I've ever visited. And so, I mean, there's good and bad. But because, you know, Sao Paulo treated us so well as far as commerce and business goes, it's hard to fault him for too many things.
Hmm. So you're looking at different models, and you looked at BRIC countries, and you thought Brazil might be interesting because of quality of life stuff. So then what happened?
Well, so then we just started looking about, you know, other kind of economic factors, and just a lot of things lined up. It was Davis, my co-founder, who was the first one to really start looking into the idea, and he started coming up with research numbers about internet penetration and e-commerce adoption, you know, how quickly people were coming online and how fast they were buying stuff. And then we started looking about what verticals hadn't been tackled yet as far as e-commerce goes. And we were interested in e-commerce because that's what we knew. You know, we'd been selling things online for, you know, 7 years, and it seemed like a natural enough story, and it kind of lined up with our abilities and our likes. And, there was just several markets that were just completely, you know, open, you know, not taken, not exploited. And, the baby space was one of them. In fact, while we were looking into it, diapers.com here in the U.S. was acquired by Amazon for a lot of money. And it was really just this moment where we all realized Brazil's awesome. The baby space is awesome. And it's obviously a really hot spot. And so everything just kind of lined up and the timing was good. And we saw an open opportunity and we took it.
So you guys from Utah just like went down to Sao Paulo to starting to do this? I mean, that's
Well, when you say it that way. I guess that if that sounds crazy, then it's crazy. But at the same time, you know, isn't that what life's about? You know, when you see opportunities, aren't you just supposed to take them?
Absolutely.
You know, when you feel something inside, doesn't it just feel good to jump? You know, and I think that's what we all felt, and I think that's what carried us there.
So you go down, and but you went down with funding in hand, or you? How did you? I got the impression you guys did some stuff first down there, and then you came back to the U.S. and got funding, and then went back and like got everything going. Is that right?
No, actually, it happened a little faster than that. We were able to raise a Series A before we actually lived in Brazil, before we actually went down there much. And, you know, of course, we did, you know, visit there, you know, between the three of us a few times before we closed the Series A. There was really, you know, no operation here when we closed. And it was actually when we closed, 6 weeks later, my wife and I and my four-month-old daughter moved down to Sao Paulo, just, you know, in just a six-week time period. So the whole thing actually happened pretty quick.
And then what happened?
Well, man, all kinds of just really crazy stuff. We, my wife and I, we lived out of a hotel for 5 months. And in the meantime, you know, I was interviewing a lot of people, and me and our first hire down there, his name was Ian Shea. Me and him just started, you know, we were together every day. We interviewed people. We met with service providers. We had to get our store up and running. Just, you know, just started getting the business together. You know, we went office hunting, and we found a couple really great spaces, and yeah, just got the business up and running.
So how did you, I mean, you to get the business going, like, where were you getting traffic from?
Yeah, so this is actually where the story becomes really uniquely Brazilian. So Brazil is just famous for its bureaucracy.
Right.
So even though I was there and we were, you know, interviewing and hiring some really, really talented people, Brazil was just making it difficult to get things up and running. It took us 7 months for us to get our business license. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way that things worked out, I mean, we couldn't even place orders with suppliers, you know, until we had a business license. So, I mean, we had a warehouse that was empty. We had a team that was, you know, although we were getting some things done, in some ways we were just twiddling our fingers waiting for our CNPJ, our business license, to come through.
I mean, that's not a Brazilian story. That's a standard Latin American, and in a lot of third world countries, that's the way it goes. Like in Haiti, I think it can take you more than a year just to get your business incorporated.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, if that's true, then that's exactly what it was like there. You know, and we had legal teams in the U.S. and in Brazil who were just pounding it. And, you know, with all of our resources going into it, that's how long it took. I mean, and that was a, you know, that was a hard period.
But you got through it. I saw there was a video that you guys made recruiting some guy to be your Scrum manager, which I hadn't actually heard of Scrum before, but it sounds, I guess he was going to be leading some of your software development. And, I mean, you guys were pretty serious about getting the right people on your team.
Yeah, actually, that was a really fun, I guess you could call that a project, hiring him. His name was Enrique. And he was just, he's the best process manager for software development in the country, in Brazil. And when we were putting together the team, it's not worth not getting the best people. It's the best people that can build the best stuff and change the world, and that was what we wanted to do. So, actually, hiring is a whole nother kind of set of stories here. We the team today stands at about 250 people,
right?
And you know, most of those hired just within a 12-month period. And once we did get the business license, and you know, we were up and running, you know, the first step in really getting a good company up and running, at least one that's really commerce heavy, is setting up your executive team. Mm-hmm. And so we went about just trying to cherry pick from the best companies and the most experienced e-commerce companies, people that, although they were working there and were doing a good job, realized that Brazil had a broken e-commerce system, that a lot of things about what were happening were just broken.
Right.
So we wanted people like in the system, but not of the system, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And that proved to be really daunting. It took us another several months to find the right person to be over marketing, the right person to be over finance, the right person to be over logistics. And
you guys were down there for how long? You were there for just a year, weren't you?
No, two years.
2 years. Because I guess I'm confused by this because there's huge barriers to entry and getting things going in these sorts of countries. And, I mean, yeah. We haven't even started talking about corruption yet, which I'm sure you've had some fun with as well. And when you're dealing with all of these things, the fact that you got from raising money in the U.S. to showing up in Sao Paulo to a company that today has 250 people and is, I would imagine, is the number one baby site in Brazil, and now you're back in the U.S., that's astonishing to me. So I'm fascinated to hear how you can piece all this together.
Yeah, so
it's like you did all the hard work and then you left.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I have to say about that is life just takes really funny courses. I mean, even a month before I ended up leaving Baby, I would never have told you that a month later I would actually be leaving Baby. So it happened really, really fast. But, you know, I think just the whole company itself speaks to just how well things are going. You know, there was three founders that moved down from the U.S. to start Baby.com at BR, and the other two are still there. My particular set of skills, I was over product at Baby. And, you know, that means I, you know, put together the product and the technology team, which is now over 25 strong. And it's just, you know, the team down there is really talented, very, very capable. And I had this other idea, you know, I had this other project that was really nipping at my heels, and I just felt like the time was right. So that's really kind of what drove me to... I mean, you're exactly right. You know, the moment things are actually kind of cooking, what am I doing? And the answer is, I'm not really sure, but we'll find out.
No, I mean, if it's not the right fit for you in some reason or another, then, you know, maybe it's better to move on and do the next thing. It just, yeah, it sounds like you did the really hard stuff.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good point.
How did you find life in Sao Paulo as an American?
Lots of ups. And, of course, there's a few compromises. And, you know, the biggest one is really just it's not home, you know? There's something just familiar about the U.S. There's just something familiar about speaking English to people. And even if you're not even engaged in the conversation, there's something about just hearing English spoken around you. In fact, I had a really, really interesting experience in the beginning of December. It had been a year since I had come to the U.S., so I'd been in Brazil for a full year. And I came to the U.S. The first week of December, and I landed, and, you know, I came out of the airport, and I went with a friend to a museum. We were just walking around and talking. And everyone around me was speaking English. And I was experiencing culture shock. It was crazy. And I was just like, I kept just getting engaged in like other people's conversations, however weird that sounds. And it was just this crazy experience. And then we went out, and she's like, hey, you know, what do you want to eat? Because they don't have Mexican food in Brazil. You know, I was like, hey, let's do Mexican because I'm a big fan. So we went and I get a quesadilla and we sit down and I look around and everybody's eating with their hands. It's like, dude, that is, you would never do that in Sao Paulo. And they're drinking, you know, their soda, you know, right out of the can. Again, you know, something you'd never see there. And I was like, whoa, so I'm just going to touch this? I'm just going to touch this food with my hands? You know, I mean, just the whole thing felt so weird. And even though it's like I knew that's okay. I mean, I knew what to do. But it didn't mean that my body was just kind of rejecting everything I was seeing. It was, but yeah, I mean, I think that kind of speaks to your question about how did I find living in Brazil. Really, really nice. You know, there's cultural differences, obviously, from the language you speak to the food you eat and how you eat it and how you drink certain things and what you do when you meet somebody. But, you know, you adapt to all those things and a lot of them actually become really endearing. I have to stop myself from kissing women on the cheek when I meet them, you know, here in the U.S. It's, you know, I find that really pleasant, you know, and that's not something I'm really going to do again, at least for a while. So I found living in Brazil pleasant and nice and warm almost completely, with then just a few things that reminds you, you know, this isn't where I grew up.
Hmm. How did you find working in the culture there? I mean, U.S. is organized on time, you know, can be fairly intense sometimes. Some might say Brazil is in a lot of ways the opposite.
Yeah, and if people say that, they would be exactly true. the work culture is definitely different. Lots of holidays. You know, I feel like countries are trying to compete to be, you know, the country that has the most official holidays. So you can find different lists that have different countries at the top. But some countries have Brazil at the top for most official paid holidays. There's just, I mean, right in the middle of a project, you'll end up having, you know, a four-day weekend, you know, twice a month.
Right.
I mean, you're just like, and it's funny, coming from America where it's like, well, you get half of Christmas Eve and the 4th of July, but that depends on where you work. you know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, in Brazil, it's just like and what's funny also, there's so many holidays you can ask Brazilians, why are we off today? And they're like, oh, yeah, actually, I'm not sure. Probably something to do with the Catholics. I mean, they don't know. We're just not working today because it's on the calendar that we don't work today. I mean,
so then they go to the beach.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of beach going. And that's another thing. The culture, and it's the same here in the U.S. You know, depending on what city you're in, the culture's totally different. You know, and West Coasters feel uncomfortable around East Coasters, and you hear things like that. But in Brazil, you know, everyone's on the same coast, but like the culture between Rio, which is just a few hours drive from Sao Paulo, is completely different. You know, Rio is much more relaxed. You know, everyone goes into work really late. Everyone leaves early. Everyone takes 2-hour lunches. Whereas in Sao Paulo, I think it is a little more, if you could call it westernized, a little more how we're used to in the U.S. It's not the same, but, you know, people are a little, you know, they're coming to work at, you know, 9:30 or 10, you know, and they're leaving at, you know, 7:30. And, you know, they're taking only roughly an hour for lunch. So, you know, I feel like in Sao Paulo, again, it's the commerce center of Latin America and of Brazil. So it is really businessy, and I feel like they're really trying to have a culture that supports that. So in certain things, they were different, but certain things are similar or getting similar.
Well, I mean, Brazil is, you know, we look at Brazil as a third world country, but there's some incredibly wealthy guys down there. I mean, there's real money down in Brazil, more than anywhere else, I would say, just about in Latin America.
Yeah, in fact, when you say third world country, in fact, before I moved to Brazil, if you would have told me third world, what did that mean to me? I would have said poor, slums, corrupt government, little government, or something like that, right? I didn't know. You know, you go down to Brazil, and it is a developing country, and now, you know, looking back at that, I'm thinking, okay, what does that mean to me now? Well, it means a lot of government, maybe too much government. It means corruption. It means ultra rich and ultra poor.
All right. I mean, you got rich who take helicopters to work every day in Sao Paulo because they're sick of the traffic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, there are more helicopters per capita in Sao Paulo than any other city in the world.
Yeah.
And that's exactly it. There is a lot of money in Brazil. And a lot of the people that we hired on our team came from money, and funny enough, found it kind of difficult to relate to a lot of our user base or customer base, you know, who were, you know, significantly beneath them, you know, in, you know, within the culture there.
So these guys, this is the thing down there, isn't it, that they don't have such an entrepreneurial mindset. So you're hiring guys who are from wealthy families in Brazil, but they come and work for you because they want to get a job. I mean, how do they not get the entrepreneurial mindset, like, properly?
Dude, excellent question. Man, how did you even know to ask that question? That's exactly right. That was one of our big hurdles initially. Now, I mean, once you're a company of 100 or 150, the startup question comes up just less and less. Because it's like, okay, you guys are at very least a medium-sized business and you're growing. Okay, I feel safe here. But, you know, when you're only a team of 3 or a team of 5 or 12 and you're like, we're going to change the country, we're going to change the world. Or, you know, commerce is broken, we're here to fix it. I mean, people start hearing that, they're like, what? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was definitely some of that. And we found ourselves talking like that a lot. And some people really resonated with it. And some people thought we were just, you know, crazy dramatic Americans, you know. But it's like, you know, there was some truth to what we really wanted to do. You know, we didn't come down there to be dramatic. We came down there to actually shake things up. And as it turns out, you can't do that unless you have the right team in place. And getting some of these people to join our team was quite difficult. You know, a lot of courting. We took a lot of people out to dinner, met a lot of spouses. And particularly, we have a real focus on hiring women and hiring moms because, you know, we want to be really close to our user and customer base.
Right.
Which, man, that only compounds the problem as far as, you know, trying to convince people because, yeah, it's just it is risky joining a team of 10 who are telling you that they're going to change the world. I mean, that sounds crazy. And particularly within an environment where there aren't startups, or at least of no significant number. And another big thing, you know, there has been no Netscape moment down there.
There's been no big exits, right?
Yeah, no Google moment or whatever you want to look at as like a big watershed moment for Silicon Valley. There's no moment like that where people can say, oh my gosh, you know, 400 people just became millionaires or 1,000 people just became millionaires.
And so given that, I mean, because that's one of the issues down there, right? There hasn't been any big exits. How do you feel about the prospects of what you guys have been building down there?
My prospects are super positive. I mean, when I'm looking at what's happening in Brazil right now, I'm not looking at something that's not going to happen. I'm looking at something that's early on but is absolutely going to happen. Baby.com.br is the future of Brazil. Startups are the future of Brazil. And there are some exits already happening. They're not as venture-backed as we'd like, and you know they're not as maybe public as we would like, but things are really starting to rumble down there. Amazon is entering the country in 2013 in a big way. They're already talking acquisitions. No. Brazil is the future. Startups are happening in Brazil, but we're just really like on the brink of that.
Were you guys with the baby site? It wasn't just about babies, was it? You intend to expand into other verticals?
Yeah. That's another great question. Yeah. So if you're going to launch, you know, on the kind of technology that we're launching on, you know, we're building our own technology platform, our own e-commerce platform. You know, you really are doing it with sights on the future. So we have one vertical today on babies, and I think really naturally we can expand into other verticals around kids. But yeah, ultimately, you know, I don't want to divulge too much here about future strategy, but yeah, ultimately there are a lot of verticals in our future that are going to be built on top of our platform.
Mm-hmm. And so the team then maintains relationships back in the States. There's high taxation making it harder for American companies to get in. So really the only way you can do stuff properly in Brazil is be there. But then they maintain relations back in the States, and so they can raise more capital as that becomes necessary, and this thing could really blow up. Is that kind of the general direction?
Yeah, so we're based in Brazil. We don't have any operations in the United States, but all of our investors, well, nearly all of our investors are based in the U.S. That's all true.
Do you run into resistance from Brazilians, being concerned that, you know, it's just a bunch of gringos coming in with gringo money and, you know, they come into the country and then as soon as they have their exit, they leave?
Boy, we sure were worried about that in the beginning. I mean, we were always like, oh, man, you know, we don't want to be we don't want to be the gringos, you know, showing up, you know, whatever. But as it turns out, you know, Brazilians, they're really warm and really friendly. And as long as you're honest with them, and we were always completely honest with their team, you know, they'll trust you. They'll work with you. In fact, overwhelmingly, we had people leaving their jobs, quitting their really great positions, and joining us even when we were a small team to do something important. And they weren't doing that because they thought we were a bunch of gringos with gringo money. They were doing that because they felt we were sincere, and we were. So I think a lot of that just has to do with intentions. I mean, take the same situation and do it all over again, but, you know, have just a couple guys that are interested in getting rich quick or something like that, I think the outcome would have been different. But, you know, our hearts and our souls and our families were all into this thing, and I think that showed.
And the other guys still are, right? You're the only one that's come back.
Yeah, and well, but in all honesty, it's not like my heart has fully left Sao Paulo or the business. I'm, you know, still a co-founder there. I, you know, have the same shares of the company today that I did a month ago, and or, you know, when we started. And yeah, it's just I really feel that it was, you know, it was a good time for me to leave and to, you know, let the team rise and shine and, you know, work on my next venture.
What were some of the frustrations down there?
Yeah, the bureaucracy, the taxes. In fact, let's talk about taxes just for a second. You know, I think it's funny hearing people, you know, here in the U.S. complain about taxes, which, you know, I think it's fine and it's the people's right to always complain about anything that the government takes. But at the same time, you know, I mean, everything is taxed and taxed at an insane rate in Brazil. You know, for instance, cars there is over 100% tax on cars. So, you know, if you're a really wealthy person, you're going to drive a Honda Accord. Mm-hmm. And so you see a lot of really small cars. You see Chinese manufactured cars. You know, you just see cars there that are just really, you know, built out of plastic or as much plastic as possible. And with really, really simple systems. In fact, while we were down there, the Toyota recall of their brakes happened. Do you remember that? So there was a problem with Toyota's brakes, like in their Camrys and their Corollas, where it would get stuck. And, you know, there was some contraption. Well, then a newspaper in Brazil wrote a piece about why the recall didn't affect any Brazilian cars. And they showed a diagram of each of the mechanical operations of the cars. And they showed the mechanical operations of the cars in the U.S. and other parts of the world. And it's, you know, computerized, and there's lots of machines, and there's lots of mechanisms that cause it to be smooth and, you know, effective and all these things. And then they showed where the problem area was. Then they showed what that same system looks like in Toyotas and Camrys in Brazil. And it's literally this lever that then pulls up the cord on the strings on the wheels on the Camry and Corolla. So it's like, you know, because they have to manufacture their cars in Brazil, you end up getting just much simpler cars. There's just fewer kind of luxuries associated with those kind of things. So, yeah, I think in a roundabout way that kind of answers that question.
Hmm. And then taxes also are an issue. Anytime you hire an employee, you're dealing with there's all sorts of severance taxes, and you can't fire people and all that sort of stuff. Like, how did you find all of that?
Yeah, I mean, first off, we kind of went into this knowing, well, we have to hire people, and we can only do our best when hiring, obviously, and we'll just have to cross that bridge when it comes. And, you know, we have had to, you know, go through that a few times with a few people. But, you know, that's just that's the cost of hiring and firing there, but you're absolutely right. Although they don't have like a suing culture there, they're, you know, employees that have been let go from companies, they sue the company that let them go much, much, much more frequently than here in the U.S. You can almost guarantee that if you let someone go that there could be, you know, a lawsuit involved.
In Brazil,
yeah. And again, it's not like they don't have a sue happy culture, but it's really just this little niche about getting let go. It's really, really common. And companies get sued actually all the time. I mean, if you buy a package and that package shows up late, you know, that someone could sue you for a few thousand reais, you know, I don't even know why, but that is what happened. And that's happened a few times to us that is an occurrence. But yeah, as far as, you know, taxes and employees, it's hefty. It's hefty when you hire them, and it's hefty when you fire them. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, but in a place like that with a lot of regulation like that, at the same time, there's a lot of corruption. So, I mean, you guys are coming down as Americans who are used to following the rules, but the Brazilians, I mean, that one saying I've heard is that on the Brazilian flag it says order in progress, and, you know, that people have forgotten to pay attention to the order part. A lot of these rules don't get followed, or do they?
I think with Brazil, there is a ton of corruption, and that is true. But as Americans, at least up to this point, you know, our consciences are not really allowing us to participate that at all. And I don't see that ever changing. So as much as we know that there is corruption and there are things that businesses do to participate in that, that's not something that we're willing to do or will ever do.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the U.S. State Department appreciates that.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I think, you know, corruption is a poison. You know, it's an absolute cancer. And it actually doesn't help business. It hurts it. And ultimately, things will change in Brazil. You know, things aren't getting less developed. They're getting more developed. And right. So as they start solving some of their problems, I know this sounds crazy, but a lot of these corruption issues are going to go away. And more companies are going to wish that they were doing it this way rather than the corrupt way.
Hmm.
So it really is a growth strategy. As much as that sounds a little backwards, it's the right decision.
Cool. What are some other interesting stories that happened during your time down there?
Oh, man, there are actually, sorry, I have a few coming around in my head. I'll start like right from the beginning. My wife and I, we arrived in Brazil when we were moving there, and we were picked up by a guy named Ian Shea. And he had a Civic, and we just had a few boxes that we'd packed up that we were moving with. And we loaded him up, you know, floor to ceiling in a Civic, and then we squished in the room that was left. And we had a four-month-old baby with us at the time. And he dropped us off at our hotel, and I had booked the hotel online on hotels.com. And basically the way I did it is I searched by price, and I went with the cheapest hotel that had free Wi-Fi. And I looked, and I specifically chose downtown because I'm thinking, yeah, downtown. Yeah, that's where you want to be. You kind of want to be at the center, right? That's where commerce happens. That was in my head. So we show up at this hotel, and it just happens to be the red light district of Sao Paulo. And we get there, and it was daylight, so we weren't exactly sure what was happening. But we get there, we get settled, and we go out and we get some like rolls and some peanut butter and have some lunch. And then it's like evening time, and my wife and I, hey, let's go get dinner. So we go outside, and we're like, oh boy, there's just, you know, all
that's
kinds
a little,
of
little different to Salt Lake City, I would imagine.
That's exactly true. And I never really made the connection to Salt Lake, but that's exactly right. I mean, the previous night we were in Salt Lake, that's right. And then we were, you know, in a red light district. I mean, it was a crazy area. And you know, then we're churchgoers. We go to church on Sunday, and we're telling people where we're staying, and all these Brazilians are freaking out. They're like, oh my gosh, you're not safe there. You need to get out of there. And we're like, yeah, you know, it's fine. Because, you know, we hadn't experienced really much of Brazil or Sao Paulo at all. So it's like we had anything to compare it against. But we actually ended up staying in that hotel for a month while we were looking for somewhere else to stay. And we finally did move. It was another hotel, but it had a bedroom and it had like a larger living area. And in a much better area of the city. And once we were there for a couple nights, that's when we realized, oh yeah, this is a much better area.
Well, Sao Paulo is like a dangerous city. So if you're in a dangerous area of a dangerous city, that's pretty brave.
Yeah, well, and I think we were fortunate. I mean, we never had a brush with crime in any way. You know, we never witnessed any violence. We never experienced any violence, which isn't true of all expats. In fact, a lot of the other expatriates who we were living with and became close friends with, you know, they did have experiences with violence, you know, even some of my co-founders. But yeah, we were really fortunate to not ever experience anything like that. And through no fault of our own. I mean, in all reality, we were really begging for it, weren't we?
Yeah, by that, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I lived in the Caribbean for 10 years, and that's I never got into any real trouble, but it's very easy to. You know, things can change on you very quickly when you don't expect it. But, yeah. Do you see some really big exits coming in Brazil? I mean, you've voted with your feet. You're back in the States. Is that more for business reasons, for family reasons? Like, where do you see the big opportunities?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually. And it's one that people ask me, man, if Brazil's so hot, what are you doing back here? And it really just has to do with the idea. You know, every now and then you get a great idea and you can do it anywhere. Every now and then you get a great idea and it has to be in a certain country. And every now and then you get a great idea and it just has to be in the U.S. My current idea is really centric on mobile, and it just makes sense to be, building and doing that here in the U.S. where smartphone mobile adoption is so strong. But, Brazil, there are lots of business opportunities, you know, still available today in Brazil. Now, it's just like, any boom time, there's a good time and a bad time. You know, a few years ago when we were starting Baby, I mean, you really couldn't have timed that any better. It was perfect. And even today, even though it's a little bit down the road and I think things aren't quite as ripe for the plucking, but, you know, Brazil, just like any great and strong economy, has a lot of open opportunity. You mentioned exits. I think that, yes, 2013 and 2014 are going to be the year of the Brazil exits.
That's when you think things will take off?
I think so. I mean, what we have is we have a lot of American businesses, U.S. businesses, moving into Brazil, looking at Brazil. And we then have a lot of people who are saying, Brazil, it's too late, or, you know, there's never been a big exit. But what you have right now are these startups that started a couple of years ago, or even last year, that are really starting to get some real traction. And I think 2013, 2014, these are the years that all that changes and the world kind of wakes up to the fact that Brazil is a big place and it's here to stay and it's here to be a major player.
How are you doing things like payments?
Yeah,
because I did a lot of interviews in China, and I mean, that was actually one of the issues that they were starting to work through, and they were doing payments through things like you'd go down to the corner store and you'd buy a telephone card, and then you'd use that to buy stuff online. I mean, how are they doing that in Brazil?
Payments, it actually works really similarly to the U.S. There's gateways that you can buy into. You can also build your own gateway. Currently, we use a third party, but I think, you know, as we get big enough, it's something we can do ourselves. And, MasterCard and Visa, they have really big footprints there, and they have big initiatives with small and medium-sized businesses and with entrepreneurship and startups, and they've been really, really nice and easy to work with, particularly because, you know, a lot of these companies down there, they're U.S.-based, you know, particularly in the payment space. And so they know it's like the promised land up here. It's like the future. So when you're down there and you're talking about what you want to do, they totally believe you. And they're like, Oh, my gosh, we would love to have a partner like you.
Right.
Let's do this. Let's show the country actually what you can do with some of our systems. And so that part has actually been pretty fluid.
But do you have enough consumers with the right sort of cards that they can pay easily?
Yeah, so actually speaking about the payment space particularly, there are some unique things to do with Brazil and the Brazilian payments. For instance, you can buy everything with installments there.
All right.
So as an e-commerce player, I mean, if you're really selling anything more than like gum or chips, you know, you're going to have installments. And so you can buy your package of diapers, you know, between on 1 to 6 installments. You know, that's important for the Brazilian consumer.
That's going to be hard to build the business, though. So you've got to deal with all these taxes and all these issues getting started. And then and then you've got that on the other side. Like, I mean, it's just as an entrepreneur, you're going to be like handing all the money over to the VCs.
The thing is, you know, you just got to look at the greater opportunity and you got to keep your eyes on that, right? I mean, getting tripped up in some of these smaller details, as frustrating or as funny as they may be, you know, it actually isn't conducive to building a bigger business. You have to keep your eyes on the larger prize, on the farther goal. But I mean, I agree with you, but the thing is, short term doesn't matter.
Right.
We're building a billion-dollar company here, and you know, we really just have to keep our eyes on that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And how do you do things like delivery? I mean, Brazil's a big country, and I think most of it, it's a little bit like my country, Australia, in that most of it's not lived in, and but the parts that I lived in, you've obviously got areas like Rio and Sao Paulo where there's reasonable infrastructure, but by the time you start getting up to Guyana and places like that, it starts to be a little different.
Man, once again, a really astute question. And it is surprisingly similar to Australia in that way. You have these really densely populated areas like Sao Paulo and Rio that are some of the largest kind of mega cities in the world. And then you have places like the Amazon rainforest, you know, that actually occupies, you know, a much larger piece of the land than the cities do.
So, I mean, if someone in Manhouse can go online, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, but someone up in Manhouse near the Amazon can go online and order diapers in installments from baby.com.br?
Yeah, that's right. We're countrywide. But that doesn't mean we have, you know, free shipping countrywide. We do have free shipping to nearly everybody who's shopping online right now. And, you know, that's in the south and southeast of the country, and that's really where the bulk of the e-commerce activity is happening for us. However, we think it's important, and maybe this is an American virtue that we brought down, but, you know, we're into democratizing that whole thing. So anyone in the country can buy anything on our website, and, you know, we'll ship it to you. But we don't really offer free shipping because, you know, getting up to Manaus, which is how you say it, Manaus, you know, is expensive. So we do actually kind of share that cost with the customer.
So they pay extra to get it up there. And then, right. I mean, how does it even get up there? I guess that you're shipping it, you're using some sort of internal shipping service, eh?
No, we partner with shipping carriers, and obviously to get to Manaus, you have to fly. So it is going through the air.
I think sometimes people up here in the U.S. don't realize just quite how big Brazil is. I mean, it's big.
Oh, yeah, it's a big, big country. I mean, there's 200 million people, so it's big population-wise. And then as far as kind of square mileage, it's one of the biggest countries in the world.
Hmm.
It's really, really big. And, you know, even though most people live, and this is what makes Brazil so cool, most people live, 200 million people, most of them live in an area the size of California.
Hmm.
I mean, that's amazing. I mean, that's a dream when you're thinking about logistics and starting a business. Now, there are some complexities in the fact that, well, not everybody lives there, and some people live in very remote parts, but still, I think, you know, by and large, Brazil is actually really conducive to that kind of thing.
Cool. Is there anything you want to talk about which we haven't covered?
I've mentioned my new venture. Just a little bit on that. It is in the mobile smartphone space. And in many ways, I'm just picking up where I left off with baby.com.br. While building, we have a Facebook community at baby.com.br that of over a million moms. And while building that was one of my first projects with one of my co-founders, Davis, and a guy we hired to be over social media named Guy. And the three of us, we would meet, you know, for a couple hours every day and try to figure out, okay, what can we do to grow this? How can we get, you know, more people engaged? What are moms interested in talking about? And so we would post things and then watch what would happen in the comments. And that's what makes actually Facebook really cool, is if you can get something sticky, you can get a wealth of data back about your users. And what we found really quickly is that moms are really only interested in talking about one thing, and that's their kids. And then within their kids, they're interested in talking about the health and development of those kids. And at baby.com.br, we're really meeting a lot of moms' physical needs, you know, with the diapers and the wipes and strollers and getting it more convenient, maybe a little cheaper. But moms also have a wealth of kind of emotional, maybe even spiritual needs. And what I'm looking to do is kind of build an app that tries to solve some of those problems. So I'm really excited about my next project. In fact, of everything I've done, and I've worked on a lot of projects, I don't think I've ever been quite as excited about it as something I'm working on right now.
And so you think this will build on top of baby.com.br, but it'll be more global rather than just Brazil?
Although, I mean, it's not directly affiliated with baby.com.br. You know, it's servicing moms, and it's something that I think moms, although I'm starting in the U.S., this is something that can, you know, have global reach. That's true.
What's the name of your new startup, or is that still secret?
Yeah, I'm calling it NewCo. there should be more to read about, more to hear about this in the coming months.
Cool. All right, McKay. Well, is there anything else you wanted to say?
No, that's it. Really appreciate the conversation. This was great.
Awesome. Well, thanks for doing the interview.
Yeah, my pleasure.